Okay, today is July 29th, 2015. This is the second interview with Joanne Carr. We are here at Steenbach Memorial Library. My name is Troy Reeves. I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. Joanne, so we can set the sound quality, can you say your name and spell your last name?
Yes, Joanne Carr, C-A-R-R.
That's perfect. I'm going to slide it a touch closer to you.
Okay.
And then I'm just going to need to project my questions, so I'm not yelling at you. I'm just trying to make sure the questions get on the record.
All right, excellent.
So Joanne, I gave you topics in advance, and we sort of talked about them briefly before we turned on the recorder. I'd like to start off, though, this time we're going to talk about less about academic staff governance, more about your occupational history.
Okay.
Here. So let's talk about that first library job you got at UW-Madison, and we'll go from there.
Okay. July of 1974, I moved to Madison and actually arrived here on a Friday, and after unloading the last of our possessions and moving them up into the apartment, walked over to the School of Library and Information Studies and got there just before it closed, and there was a woman who was posting a job on the jobs board that they had at the library. And so I took down the information, spent the weekend preparing a cover letter and updating my resume on my manual typewriter, and on Monday morning walked over to the Instructional Materials Center in the Teacher Education Building to hand deliver my application and resume. I spoke with the director for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, during which time she commented that she liked people who got up early in the morning. And yes, I was there at opening, but getting up early in the morning is not my usual pattern, and that she would be getting back in touch with me. And over the next 3 weeks, I did not hear from her, but had other temporary jobs. And then on Friday of the third week, I received a call offering me the position of cataloger at the Instructional Materials Center. So my long career in the libraries at UW-Madison was based on a resume, a cover letter, and a 10 to 15 minute chat rather than a full interview.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered later that getting a professional library job on the Madison campus was supposed to be much more difficult than that. So it was very much a matter of being in the right place at the right time. The Instructional Materials Center, when I came to it, had been an item of discussion in the school's previous NCATE, that's the National Council for the Accreditation of Teacher Education, for the school's previous NCATE report. The Instructional Materials Center was not viewed in a positive light. Much of the collection was built from gifts and discards from other libraries. The Instructional Materials Center, let me step back and sort of give a profile of what it was. An Instructional Materials Center is a term taken from K-12 education, often used in the late 60s, 70s, to refer to the school library, to really focus on the fact that the materials are there in order to support instruction rather than for independent research or recreational reading. So that was where the term came from. The collection itself had been built upon what had been the school library collection at the Wisconsin High School when it closed, as well as audiovisual materials that were beginning in the post-Sputnik years to be heavily used in K-12 education, and which my understanding, when they first began being used, the Memorial Library, which housed the education professional education collection, would not accept because audiovisual materials were not scholarly materials were not the types of materials appropriate for an academic library. So there were the collection at the Instructional Materials Center was based upon what had been primarily a print collection in the at Wisconsin High School, some AV materials, and I'm talking film strips, film loops, long playing records, those pre-prepared overhead slides, and so it had those two elements. It also housed the Eric Microfiche collection for the campus. Eric was a project of the federal government, is a project of the federal government that began in, I believe, 1964, and to reproduce educational literature on microfiche and distribute it throughout the country. And then they later went to also indexing journals in the field of education. Again, my understanding was Memorial Library, at the time that the Eric Microfiche collection began, was not willing to accept that as a scholarly resource, and so it came to the Instructional Materials Center. And then when the Instructional Materials Center was developed, some of the materials that had been part of the education library in Memorial Library came over to the Instructional Materials Center. But there wasn't very much of a collection development budget. So after that initial collection of materials, there was very little left to continue developing the collection. I was only the second full-time staff person hired at the Instructional Materials Center, so there had not been a full-time cataloger. And I spent most of that first year at the Instructional Materials Center cataloging materials that had been donated to the IMC. Many of them were materials that faculty members, as they retired, no longer wanted to have, and so they came into the to the IMC. After I had been there about a year, I received a telephone call at my desk from the dean's secretary, indicating that the dean wanted the opportunity to meet with me to discuss the future of the IMC. And we scheduled a time for me to meet with the dean without informing the then director of the IMC of the meeting. And Dean John Palmer and I had a frank discussion about the state of the IMC. And about a month after that, the director of the IMC was named the director of who was a tenured faculty member. And she was appointed the director of a new collection called the Historical Materials Collection. So some of the materials from the IMC were moved to a room in the Education Building on Bascom Hill. The director moved with them, and after a year on the job, I was appointed acting director of the IMC. There was subsequently a national search to find a new director, and Denise Irwin, who had been director of school libraries in a Boston suburb, was hired to be the new director of the IMC, and most of the next 2 years was spent culling the collection that was in existence at the IMC, and then collection development funds were allocated by the school, so we also were building a new collection at that time period. And the collection had to be very, very carefully assessed because we quite frankly didn't have a complete record of what was in the collection. The previous director, in preparation for the NCATE review, was worried about the cataloging backlog that she had, and so had assigned Dewey call numbers to items, had labels typed, and placed them on the shelves without any records of the items in the catalog. There was also a very, very extensive collection of vertical file materials. I believe the number of file cabinets, it was 88 four to six drawer file cabinets, and every single item needed to be gone through carefully because what had been placed in the vertical file collection varied from a newspaper clipping to a major report on the state of K-12 education. During the time that Denise Irwin was director of the IMC, we rebuilt the collection. We also added another full-time staff person to direct technical services. We became one of the first libraries on campus to implement OCLC cataloging because we needed to recatalog the entire collection, so it seemed to be an opportune time to do that. We added a number of half-time graduate assistant positions. So the staff and the collection really became totally revitalized. We were a much different entity. And my responsibilities changed from being in cataloging to I was the public services librarian, which meant staffed and supervised the reference desk. I staffed and supervised the circulation desk. I coordinated our reserves, was working much more with a broad group of students and much more closely with faculty in terms of the reserves. We also began implementing an instructional program so that we went beyond. There had been tours given of the IMC and under the previous director, but we began focusing on instruction in the use of various resources and the collection, and so really changed that as well. I continued as the public services librarian for 8 years after Denise Irwin actually died at a very young age, and again after a national search, another new director was hired, and this was Dean Whitehill, who had been on the staff of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign for many, many years, had left there and had established a new library in Iran, at a new university in Iran. And as she said, when the gunfire reached her street in the fall of 1979, she decided it was time to look for a new job. And so she came to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And then she came there in late 1979. And then in 1983, she retired. And I was hired as director of the Instructional Materials Center. During Dean's time, there was a much stronger emphasis on greater collaboration in the libraries across campus. I was very involved in that. one of the first projects that was undertaken was, at that time, the general library system really had very little interaction with other libraries with the law library, the engineering library, and the health sciences library. But the School of Library and Information Studies, the Cooperative Children's Book Center, the Primate Research Center Library, the MAP Library, the Social Sciences Reference Library, the Data and Program Library Services Library, the Schwartz-Fegler Aerospace Images Library, and about 40 other special libraries existed on campus. The directional information available through the Memorial Library System this is well before there was any sort of online catalog across the campus. And so the directional information made no mention of all of these other libraries on campus. So one of the first projects I worked on with the members of the Special Campus Libraries Group, we formed an informal association, SCLG, to begin talking about cooperation and collaboration across the special libraries on campus. And one of the first projects we worked on was a campus libraries map that that was just for the special purpose libraries, but it had information about the each of the libraries, the address, the phone number, the hours, and then its location on a map. That, over the years, grew into the campus-wide libraries map, which was probably about 10 years after the SCLG map was launched, was taken over, or the responsibility was assumed by the Memorial Library System, who then all the libraries across campus were involved. Are reflected on that map. This also required that we actually do work on defining what is a library, because there were some institutions that identified themselves as special purpose libraries or special campus libraries that had no staff, had no regular hours, and whose collections were basically rooms in a department that had been a collection had been created by bringing together faculty members' materials. And so this required that there become a definition of the libraries on campus. There were also, as we moved forward in looking at collaborative projects, we also did a full directory at one point of all the special purpose libraries on campus. It's probably in your archive somewhere. And so this, as we move forward, we also had to begin looking at issues of, as we looked at stronger collaboration, how open were collections to people outside of a department or a research center, et cetera. And so that was difficult for some individuals who had really identified their resource as a critical library for the campus. But as we looked at stronger collaboration and definitions and funding, that became a point of contention among the special campus libraries and special purpose libraries. And I mentioned funding because during Dean Hill's tenure, funds became available from the central campus to support the participation of libraries as net lenders in the interlibrary loan process. And because of the higher prominence of the special campus libraries and the fact that we were among the first places to implement OCLC, and so people could see what our collections were, we were becoming net lenders on the campus. And so there were a limited number of the special purpose libraries. The School of Library and Information Studies, the Primate Research Center Library, and the Instructional Materials Center, those are the only ones I remember, who began receiving funding allocation, collection funding allocations from Central Campus as well. So that collaboration across libraries, the fact that we had redeveloped the Instructional Materials Center, that we implemented the OCLC cataloging, I think the very first library on campus to do that, and we had led in this collaboration across libraries, really changed the profile of the IMC.
Joanne, I'm gonna pause you right here for a couple reasons.
I'm gonna hit.
Joanne, thank you for letting me pause there. From what I was hearing, this stuff occurred before you became director?
Yes, yes. Okay. But it's really when I was beginning to have more of a campus presence.
Right. All right, so, and you're probably something very important you were going to say there when I cut you off to pause. So you have this increased campus presence, and then sort of what happens with the director, the then director that then allows you, if you will, to become director of the IMC?
Well, in 1984, so I'd been on campus for 10 years, Dean Hill retired, and again there was a national search, and this time I was appointed director of the IMC at that point, based mostly upon the record of accomplishment on campus, on the fact that I had been involved with the revitalization of the IMC. That I had strengthened the tie, you know, my work in helping to strengthen ties across the campus. I was actually for a number of years chair of the Special Campus Libraries group on campus, and so, you know, was seen as a leader in across the campus libraries. Mm-hmm. So in 1984, I became director of the Instructional Materials Center, and we continued to try to play a leadership position on the campus. Among the things that we did was, I mentioned the Eric microfiches being housed at the IMC. Well, in addition to the Eric microfiche, the federal government had also developed the Eric database. And in fact, under the old Dialog, that was a corporation that supported databases and search strategy, or a search engine for using dumb terminals to connect to mainframe computers were the databases. And in the Dialog system, the ERIC database was database number one because it was the first database they had ever worked with. So we were doing searches of the ERIC database before Dialog was adopted on campus using a locally developed program to connect with the ERIC database, which actually was housed on servers at DOIT, And when I became director, and I don't have the exact year on this, but shortly after I became director, the opportunity for moving from a pay system where you, because individuals would have to pay the cost of searching these mainframe databases. There was a cost per hour, so the efficiency of the librarian doing the searching was very important. And there was also a cost per citation, because you certainly weren't getting anything full text. And so the efficiency of the librarian was very important, as well as the ability of the librarian to really focus on the information need of the user was extremely important, because if you had too many citations, not only was there too much information for the individual to go work through, but every single citation, I think, cost them a dime. So it came out of their pocketbooks. Mm-hmm. Then in the late 80s, I believe it was, the concept of reproducing these databases on compact disks, which could be sold to libraries, was introduced, and the IMC became the first library on campus to purchase the online database on CD, have the computers available for the public to search, and moved the campus into the first use of direct user searching of databases. The computer with its CDs sat on the reference desk counter, and people could, and this was radical then, it really was, people could just walk up, sit down at this computer, and at no cost to them, begin searching for the information they needed, which really expanded the use of the database from graduate students who, had a vested interest in getting as much information as possible through the entire student population, and even to teachers who were our community users, because now this resource, which their access to was through print volumes where you had to look up your term and make a list of everything that dealt with discipline in the classroom and everything that dealt with grade 4 education, and then compare to see which ones were in both sets. All of a sudden you could get a printout of the ones that were in both sets. So that was a pretty radical change. The other thing that we continued to do was be aware of the changes in technology that were happening in K-12 education. And so during that time period, I also started participating in the Wisconsin Educational Media Association, which was the professional association for K-12 librarians and technology staff. And we did some collaborative work with the Department of Public Instruction as well. And realized that, became more and more aware of the ways that personal computers were being used in the schools. And so I believe we were the first library on campus to implement our own computer lab. It was actually called the Instructional Software Preview Lab. Yes, the ISPL. And we began with a non-circulating collection of instructional software, three Macintosh computers, and 3 IBM PCs. And so the only real use of those computers were for previewing the instructional software. Now, during this same time period, the School of Education had established a separate computer lab for things like word processing and data manipulation and spreadsheets and things of that nature that was affiliated with the Wisconsin Center for Education Research. And as the Wisconsin Center for Education Research continued to be successful and had a more and more grants and more and more research projects to house, the space that their computer lab was in became prime territory. And so a new home was sought for their computer lab. Because of the experience that we had with offering individuals direct searching of databases through the CDs and with the instructional software preview lab, I proposed to the school that the IMC would be an appropriate location to house the computer labs and computer classrooms for the School of Education. And that proposal was accepted because we had a good track record. The staff of the computer lab in the school and the equipment was all brought over to the IMC. We remodeled what had been a media production room where people would, it had mimeograph machines in it, for example, old technologies. Where people used old technologies, dry mount presses, mimeograph machines, trying to remember what. There was actually a piece of equipment to create transparencies, but I forget what it's called. So we converted that space into computer classrooms for the School of Education. And so began not only supporting word processing, spreadsheet, database creation needs, but also because of the needs of the art department for graphics-based programs. We were supporting their graphic production programs as well, and those spaces were available not only for students to use for their own work, but that was our first foray into offering classroom spaces within the confines of the IMC. And because we were doing that, the IMC, even before I began there, had always had equipment to support the AV materials in the collection. So if somebody had checked out a film strip, they could check out a film strip projector. If they checked out some overhead projector, overhead slides, they could check out overhead projector. And we, as we got more involved in the with the labs and the classrooms, we also began recognizing that students needed the electronic equipment to produce materials. We had still cameras, we had video cameras, we actually had portable microfiche readers so people could check out the Eric microfiche. Microfiche are cheap to replace. I don't know why people didn't just check it out. And we were actually written up in American libraries because of our portable microfiche readers. So we had all of those, and then as laptops became more portable, you may remember in the early days of laptops, they were more luggables than portables. As those became more portable, we began adding laptops to our circulating materials collection. So again, I believe we were the first library on campus to support instructional classroom space, as well as support a circulating collection of electronic equipment. And because we were moving in this direction, our name was changed from the Instructional Materials Center to the CIMC, which is the Center for Instructional Materials and Computing. During this time period, we continue to have collaborations across campus. This is also when NLS, the Network Library System, was being implemented, which was the campus-based online catalog. And we were since our collection was an OCLC, we were included in the campus-based online catalog. Since we had to totally revitalize our collection and recatalog it, we did all of our retrospective cataloging before anybody else on campus did, out of necessity. When part of your collection isn't even cataloged, you have no other choice. And so we were involved in the Network Library System. By this point, we had 4 professional staff, I believe, and 2 classified staff, as well as our graduate assistants. All of the professional staff were involved in the various committees across campus. As director, I was still involved in collection development issues, and not only was involved in the campus collection development committee, but also was a representative and for a short time was chair of the UW System Collection Development Officers. And so we were beginning to look at collection development in a much broader sense. And although the IMC was not an instigator in terms of the open borrowing across the UW system, we were certainly one of the first participants in that as well. We continued to move forward. We did take leadership in a couple of areas. I worked with Jane Bannerman of College Library to write an academic staff professional development grant to invite Virginia Tiefel, who was nationally known as the leader of, I believe it was Ohio State's bibliographic instruction program, to come to the Madison campus and offer a full-day workshop on collaboration across campus on bibliographic instruction and moving what had been a program of discrete activities in individual libraries into a cohesive program across campus. One of the results of that day-long workshop, which concluded with a discussion with the library directors in Virginia, was the creation of the first instruction coordinator position for the UW libraries. And Abby Loomis was hired in that position, and I believe that it was under Abby's leadership then that the campus requirement for the integration of instruction information literacy in the undergraduate curriculum was implemented. Another benefit of this strong collaboration across the libraries by working together and developing this professional development grant and having this day-long workshop and structuring a time to meet with the directors library directors. Following that, we really changed the curriculum of the UW-Madison.
Can I jump in here? I ask a lot of people that sort of worked through or lived through this time period about changes in technology and how it affected your work. From what I'm hearing from you, IMC, CIMC, you know, eventually Merit.
Yeah.
I mean, really embraced technology.
Yeah.
New technology. And it led to, you know, opportunities to collaborate, opportunities to grow.
Yes.
Is that what I'm...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and it's a long history. When I came, in addition to cataloging, one of the things that I did was search the ERIC database on that CRT terminal connected to the databases on the mainframe at DeWitt. Moving to the dialog system was very natural. Moving to the CD-based self-service searching was natural. In order to support what was happening in K-12 education, we had to move from film strips to films to film loops to... we even embraced for a short time period the... they were the very, very large discs of materials. I can't remember...
So is it akin to the laser disc?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
We had a collection of those. And one of the decision points that we had to make was whether to go with Beta or VHS when videotapes began being implemented. And all along these we also use computers for our own work because we needed to have that comfort with technology in order to meet the needs of our users, because that's what they were using. They were beginning to be introduced to in the classroom, and we knew that's what in the long-term view of their career would be vital to their use in the classroom. We really did embrace it. And I think we also very, very strongly embraced change and moving forward. And I'm using we here because as the staff of the IMC and then the CIMC continued to grow and expand, it was very important for us to have a much more collaborative approach to the work that we were doing. If people didn't like meetings, they wouldn't have liked working with me, because we would have staff meetings with a structured agenda once a week. We would have task force meetings on various topics. With our staff meetings, because I worked as a student in libraries when I was in high school and college, and I really embrace what student-staff can contribute. So we always had a student-staff representative elected by the students who was paid to participate in the weekly staff meetings and also was paid to for time spent in communicating with the other members of the student-staff. So we had a very, very collaborative management structure. We also had a very, very structured planning process. I don't really think it was strategic planning, but it worked well for us. We identified our goals and would re-examine those, and the goal would be a big overarching goal. At one point, our goal was to be known as the premier source for education information in the state of Wisconsin with a and to enhance a national reputation. Yeah, we weren't shy. Mm-hmm. And we also identified some of our values. Probably the most important of those values was joy in the workplace and the work. We would identify ways that we knew we were doing a good job in serving the needs of our users. I actually worked for a dean who told me, if I don't hear anything bad about you, that's good enough. And that wasn't good enough for us. We did surveys of our users. We had a faculty committee that we would invite to critique our work. But we also loved it because we often would receive end of the semester gifts from our users, or end of degree program gifts from doctoral students. And we'd look at all of those things to see how well we were meeting individuals' needs. Invited suggestions from users constantly, as well as invited suggestions from staff. So, yes, we embraced technology. We embraced continued growth and change, and I think that really allowed the IMC, CIMC, and then Merit to be a vital part of the School of Education, and to be a very fulfilling place, not just for me, but for many other people to work as well. So I think we are up to the time period now where I began taking responsibility for the Instructional Media Development Center, mm-hmm. as well as the CIMC. And
so we're at, I have no problem if you have no problem coming back for another session.
Yeah, why don't we do that? That way I can review that.
We're pivoting to a pretty big thing here.
Yeah.
So there's one more thing I want to ask, and then I want to make sure you have space if there are things that we talked about that you feel you need to add to. So you mentioned that, and I think this was after you became director, that you and your staff continue to be involved in campus-wide mm-hmm. Activities. I think I know why you wanted to be involved, but why did you feel it important to make sure that, as you became director, your staff was involved in campus-wide activities and committees?
Part of it was I didn't have the expertise that I knew my staff had. Michael Cohen was our technical services librarian for a number of years, and Michael's knowledge of cataloging and online systems was far beyond what I had, so that just made much more sense. Nancy McClements was our public services librarian for a number of years, and again, her skills and abilities were very, very strong. In looking at user needs and matching those with resources and thinking about structuring programs to help users with their information needs. So it was partly to have the expertise, and it was also because as part of the interview process, it was set as an expectation that we did not work in isolation. And so people who came into the IMC and CIMC knew that this was part of the job, and so the people who would be applying for the positions were people who wanted involvement beyond this IMC, CIMC. That involvement was not just with the campus libraries. I also would push for members of the staff to be involved in committees within the School of Education. And that was very important to me, because it gave us a presence within the school. It allowed us to discuss issues with faculty and staff in different fora. As director, I was automatically a member of the administrative council for the school. But as we became more involved in technology in the school, established an information technology committee, I pushed for us to be a member of that committee. I also pushed for us to be a member The Coordinating Committee on Teacher Education, and that took a lot of pushing because that was a committee that really dealt with curriculum development issues, and I was able to finally convince them that if we were going to have collections and services to support the curriculum, we needed to be at the table. We were ex officio on that, but that was fine. We didn't want to make the decisions, we just wanted to know what was going on. We have School of Education, or we have members who were on the Equity and Diversity Committee for the School of Education, again, so that we knew what was happening in the school. I think those were the major committees. So we really, you know, collaboration was one of our values, and as people became members of our staff, they knew that our values and goals documents were shared with them as part of the recruitment process.
Joanne, is there anything else about this time period? So I think we probably got to the earliest 90s.
Maybe? Yes, yeah.
So I'd say, you know, yeah, almost a couple of decades.
Yeah.
Anything that's on your mind currently?
No.
Okay.
No.
I would say, you know, if something does pop into your head, just sort of write it down or whatever, or email me that you want to talk about it, and we'll talk about it in the next session.
Okay, sounds
so
good.
So this concludes the second oral history session with Joanne Carr. Joanne, thank you for your
time. You're very welcome.